Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thank you for joining us. I ask it again to visit our sponsors and supporters. Hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving, and we're back, and it's cold out there right now. My name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Alan Harrop.
Pat Park.
Glenn Fink.
And Kim may or may not be able to make it a little bit later. She may burst into the show mid-show.
She may.
She may. Okay. So we're going to...
Fannygate.
Fannygate.
Last week I said it was my last Fannygate update, but there's been a new development, and that is that there's a Georgia state statute that says defendants who are prosecuted by a district attorney who's then disqualified from the case can seek attorney's fees. So that means all of those people are going to ask Fulton County to pay their attorney's fees.
Good for them.
And that's going to be a lot of money.
They're not asking Fannie, even though she is currently working for Fulton County.
Right.
But they're not asking
that's
her.
That's not personal.
It's not personal.
State.
Well, I think it's the right thing. If you're prosecuted incorrectly and you have to spend thousands of dollars to defend yourself and it's inappropriate, you ought to be reimbursed. It's like civil suits, right? In a lot of civil suits, isn't that? Don't
right.
You have the opportunity
yes.
to get the money from the person
damages,
who brought
they
the
call
suit?
It.
Yeah.
But the taxpayer pays the price, but the taxpayer is the person who voted her into office.
I was going to say that. They elected her.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then they reelected her.
At some point, they might get fed up.
Maybe.
Possibly.
Wait till the feds ask for their grant money back. Grant money she used to pay her lover instead of setting up the juvenile gang unit.
Speaking of creative use of money, who was it, Governor Walz?
Jazz hands.
now where has the $1 billion gone in Wisconsin?
To Al-Shabaab.
It's gone to Somalia.
It's gone to Somalia.
To terrorists.
But some of it, they were actually using, you could buy expensive vehicles. Some of the people.
Yeah, they were living high on
They were living high on with information. And
overseas is where
No, here. And they were using it here, and they were sending a lot of it, like was Pat said, was sent over to a terrorist group in Somalia.
And a couple that was convicted, that was the case that the judge overruled the jury and said, I don't think they're really guilty.
Was that one of the 50? 50 have been prosecuted, and there are 70 more that have been.
Well, this case came to trial, and the judge overruled the jury verdicts. So
I know. Was that part of one of the Somalia 50?
That was part of the scandal with the health.
Because I had
Medicare
the impression
fraud.
It was a different case.
But it was, again, it was the Medi-Cal fraud case. They had set up a number of medical companies at their home address that were billing Medicare for services that never happened, and they were buying luxury items, and the jury found them guilty, and the judge said, well, I think all this evidence is circumstantial, so she overruled the jury.
Inappropriate, in my opinion.
All evidence except direct eyewitness testimony is circumstantial. So when you hear somebody say, well, that case is all circumstantial, as if that is lesser evidence. Like DNA evidence is circumstantial, okay? So for the judge to say, well, that's just circumstantial, I'm sorry, but that's not a legal.
You know, why have a jury trial if the judge can override the results of the jury?
Exactly.
Well, I explained that last time, because sometimes it needs to be done. If there's a case that excites a lot of public emotion, like the evolution trial.
You think that should be brought before the trial, that they come out and say, not wait until after the result is in? Why not? If a judge thought a particular case did not warrant prosecution or thought that there was undue publicity or whatever, you would think the judge would stop the trial before it took place.
He can.
Not allow the trial to go through.
He can.
And then he doesn't like the results. He or she doesn't like the results, so then they overturn it. It just seems like
No, the judge, at the end, when both sides rest, the defense immediately makes a motion to dismiss for failure to prove their case. because the state has the burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt. So at that point, the judge can grant the motion and the case is over. It never gets to the jury.
Yeah,
if he decides that the state has put on enough evidence to reach probable cause, he lets it go through to the jury.
Now, when the silliness...
Yeah, well, that makes sense. But it's not. That's not the same as after the jury rules. Isn't that what happened?
The jury already ruled,
yes.
Heard all the evidence, made a decision. Then the judge comes in, well, I don't like that decision.
Well, I'm not approving of her decision, but I'm just explaining that it is possible.
And there might be a situation, as silly as it may get, there may be a situation where there was evidence that was presented that was then ruled inadmissible evidence, and the jury ruled based on that, quote, inadmissible evidence.
We have another case coming up that we may see some very interesting legal gymnastics with, and that is the Luigi Mangione case. Because, I mean, they have video evidence of him shooting the UnitedHealthcare CEO. But the his lawyers are trying to get to say some evidence was illegally obtained, and they're trying to get the case thrown out.
Well, weren't they saying that when he was arrested in, I think it was New Jersey, a couple of days after the shooting, that he had a backpack with him? And I think the argument was that the backpack at that point, they did not have the authority from a court warrant to search into that backpack. But they found, my understanding is they found the murder weapon in his backpack. And they also found evidence that he was what justified him doing it. I mean, just some of his reasons that he went and shot this person. And
If the police arrest him, they're entitled to search his backpack and his body for weapons.
You would think somebody that you're arresting has a backpack and you don't search it, and it pulls out a gun, it would be pretty devastating.
One reason you search is because he may claim later it had $10,000 in it and the police stole it. So they at least have to take an inventory.
Well,
okay. What else do we want to?
And that's an exemption from the warrant.
I'd like to talk about this issue going on. I know it's been in the media a lot about what's going on with this fraud and abuse up in
Minnesota
concerning the Somali immigrants.
Yeah.
And what it strikes me as how inappropriate, or should say inadequate, the tracking of the social welfare programs are, that you can have this fraud, which they now attribute could be almost to $1 billion over a period of years, that this fraud was being committed. They were claiming that certain students were getting meals that then the kids didn't even exist. There was housing support for people who were supposedly disabled and they weren't disabled. So there was all this fraud going on. So what troubles me is that you have these social welfare programs and nobody's monitoring them closely enough to detect this. Where, up to $1 billion, that should be obvious to somebody that something's not right.
Well, I guess if you look at somebody creates a nonprofit organization that's going to do all these wonderful things, and you instantly go and give away the meals and do this and you document all that stuff, how many years is it before you audited? Has anybody checked them out right up front, or do they always wait for an audit? I mean, we right now, I'm going to say in North Carolina, we're very, very fortunate to having the auditor that we have now, Dave Boilek, because he is digging, and finding, I'm not talking about illegalities all the time, but he's finding inefficiencies that we really, really should not have. I mean, the government thinks that they're spending free money. No, it's our money.
And a private business wouldn't stay in business if they were allowing that to happen. I mean, they've got a profit margin, they have stockholders they have to report to, whereas with these social programs, once they get started, there's nobody watching them closely.
Yeah, but shouldn't the application process be of such a substance that what they give you could be cross-checked and don't just accept it for face value?
Well, there's a certain lack of oversight on all government programs. And one of my favorite quotes is Milton Friedman, who was an economist, who said, if you put the federal government in charge of the Sahara Desert, in 5 years, there'd be a shortage of sand. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're just, it's not their money, and they're not keeping track of it the way they should.
Yeah, the individual worker, I suppose, that's collecting, like you say, you would think that somebody collecting an application would ensure that the information was valid. But I think in a lot of cases, it's not their money. I don't think, and some of them, I think, that are more leaning to left and want this money to go, they're not motivated to. Why should they?
We should crank up AI on this stuff.
Right. So
yes, I think
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I think that's what Doge was beginning to do.
Well, look at Bernie Madoff. I mean, how many years did he run his Ponzi scheme, and how many influential people did he actually incorporate into his Ponzi scheme?
Yeah. How many names we know lost money in that deal?
But it's interesting how Trump came out and said that he was going to revoke the protective status for these Somali residents. I'm talking about even people here legally now, and revoke visas and take action because he's, and in Somalia, I think it's like 99% of the population are Muslims. And the terrorist group there, Al-Shabaab, what they do is they take the money that any Somali person sends to the country. They take part of it, no matter how it comes in and whether it's intended to go to them or not. And a lot of that money was winding up going over to Somalia.
Yeah, the great funds transfer. We were talking earlier. Yes, how much of our money is leaving the country and heading out?
Well, that's another argument in favor of keeping an eye on remittances.
And I guess now, was it Western Union? Maybe
the amount that the Somalis sent is larger than the country's budget.
Yes. Okay. Folks, on that, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
The County Compass is a rapidly growing, free, weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. We're going to shift gears and we're going to head off to
Narco boats.
Venezuela.
What else can we throw into there? Venezuela, narco boats.
Taking out Maduro. I mean, there's a lot of things.
We're going to throw Venezuela into the Washington Post. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, the Washington Post was doing a hit piece on Pete Hegseth, accusing him of giving the order for the second strike on the boat. Now, the second strike on the boat, I don't think should be controversial, but that's an opinion. Pat, you had some information on exactly who these boats belong to, and
well, I'm not big on international law, but I read an article today that said if a boat is operating in international waters and it doesn't have the flag, it's not registered under the flag of a nation, that it's considered to be a pirate. Therefore, it has no protections. So if you want to drone it, go right ahead. I mean, that's what Thomas Jefferson did to the Barbary pirates. He went over there and...
man, he was ahead of his time.
He droned it, yes. Kind of droned it.
Now, I'm totally ignorant of international law on boats, but is any boat traveling anywhere supposed to have a flag on it?
Yeah.
In the international waters.
Yeah. That's why when you see these, if you probably miss it because you skip right over it, but they'll tell you that Iran took into custody a ship that was passing through the Straits of Hormuz, and it was under the flag of Liberia or something. So it makes a difference.
So
it's weird how they register them.
But they have to be registered somewhere or else they're considered pirates. That's very interesting.
We'll ask the Somali pirates.
Right? Right?
Well, these people, the way I look at it, I mean, and my understanding is that these people have been identified by intelligence information about these boats, what they're taking, and the pictures they show them stacked up with these things.
Bales
of drugs. Okay. So they take those out. We're protecting our borders. We're protecting our people. Okay, we have a right to do that. Okay. Second thing is, they seem to be using the rules of the Geneva Convention, where if you're fighting against another country that has declared war against you, or you versus them, or whatever, if somebody's in a uniform as part of that organized military, they're treated differently than somebody's not in a uniform that might be a guerrilla or a spy or whatever. And I think that's a difference that I don't hear them talking about. These people were not officially part of the military of Venezuela that I heard of.
No.
So they're like you said,
they're cartel.
They're part of the narco-terrorists. And how is that any different than what Obama did when he was dropping drones on these terrorists in all parts of the Middle East?
Because he's a Democrat.
Yeah. Well, that may be the only difference.
That's the difference.
Well, we've also got some action going on with the government of Mexico, and they've turned over 55 major cartel leaders.
Mexico cooperating with us?
Yes.
And they must want them out of their country.
Yeah.
And the head of
they
Mexico.
They don't want to deal with them anymore.
No, because they put them in prison, they'll either escape.
Right.
Or somebody will mount a rescue.
It's not out of the goodness of their heart.
Or they'll kill
to help
everybody
us.
On the court. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the head of Mexico is supposed to be coming to meet with Trump on Friday.
Who, Ms. Sheinbaum?
Sheinbaum, a strange name for a Mexican leader.
It sure is.
But anyway. Well, you know, the drug problem is a worldwide problem. And it's nice that we're dealing with the people that are making money from it. But at some point, we've got to address the end market. And people who are on drugs don't get off drugs because you tell them to. They don't get off drugs unless they want to.
So what is your suggestion for how we deal with the market for drugs?
I don't know.
There is none. It's up to each individual druggie whether they're going to stop taking drugs or not.
Well, the thing that we are accomplishing with this is that we are probably making the drugs much more expensive because supply and demand. We are taking significant amounts off the market. But, I mean, I know Rhode Island a number of years ago set up a situation where they provided essentially tiny houses for drug addicts, put them on methadone or whatever they were using at the time to substitute, and help them get jobs and help them function on some level.
Yeah. How'd that work?
It worked out very well, but at the same time, you're still creating a drug addict. You haven't solved the problem. But they actually were able to help people get into jobs and function in society on some level, but they were tracking their drug use. They were giving them whatever the substitute was for the drug they were using. They were tracking their dosage, and, you know, they were doing what they needed to do, and they had some success with it. But again, you're not solving the problem. You're just kind of changing the addiction to another drug.
Well,
there's no doubt that hitting the source, especially if it's a big load in a boat, is the most productive strike you can do.
And cheap.
Yeah, so
it's definitive. I mean, it's not like trying to persuade somebody to stop taking drugs, because some of these people, they're unpersuadable.
And less recidivism, yes.
Yeah.
Lock them up.
Yeah.
The best way to deal with druggies is to lock them up, keep them off the street, if that's all you can do.
Yeah, we had a friend of ours who's 22-year-old's son died of fentanyl overdose. And they tried everything with him to get him to stop taking drugs. He was in several different rehab programs. And before he got on drugs, he was an ideal child, the kind of person you'd say, this person will never do drugs. He was a missionary from his church that he went to. He was very involved with youth groups and so on, very successful in school. And he got into drugs, started, I think, probably with marijuana. And he just became, and his parents would say to him, would try to help him, and he'd say, I just can't help it, I'm an addict. That was his attitude. And the reality of it, just like you said, Pat, he might still be alive had they put him in prison, because he was not either not motivated or not able to control himself. Now he's dead. So they were trying, they did not want to incarcerate him. The parents wanted to think that, well, I'm going to treat him. I don't want to make a criminal out of my son. But in reality, because these fentanyl is in all these other drugs, it's added to these things. I don't think he took the fentanyl knowingly, but it's in some of these other things, and he wound up dying at 23 years old.
Well, it's hard to kick drugs. Look at how hard it is to kick cigarettes. Nicotine is very addictive, and people have, you know, they gain weight, and then they decide, I'd rather smoke than be fat.
And then the vaping gives you the same nicotine, well, not the same, but a similar nicotine fix.
Well, I'm saying that nicotine is as addictive as cocaine.
Yes, yes.
And it's hard to kick smoking. And so to expect drug addicts to quit all the various illegal drugs that they're taking just because we asked them to.
Well, you know, if you go back and look historically at what happened with China, there were many, probably millions of Chinese addicted to opium. And that was intentionally done by the British because the British were trading with, they wanted the tea out of China, and they didn't have anything to trade back that China wanted. So they started bringing in opium, and they got a lot of Chinese. And when the Chinese finally, how'd they stop it? They started giving capital punishment to anybody that was dealing with opium, that was a dealer. They just started executing them, and it stopped. They stopped it.
Now,
that's a pretty harsh thing to do, but what our approach seems to be to give people 2, 3, 4 chances. You know, these drug dealers, they're out. And
well, it's like our efforts to help the homeless. We build these homes for them, and they tear them up, and they leave. They don't want to live in a home. They're homeless by choice.
Yep.
Not all of them, but a lot of them are homeless by choice, and you can't make them live in there just to assuage your conscience.
And actually, you know, when you mentioned the homeless thing, I'm just having been the firefighter back a number of years ago, and today is the 26th year after we lost 6 firefighters in a cold storage warehouse in Worcester, Massachusetts, because the fire was in there and the homeless were living inside. It was not documented or not laid out for easy access or easy exit, and 6 firefighters lost their lives in that one thing. Again, the homeless were there; that's where they wanted to be, and the abandoned building was just a perfect site and a perfect setup for a tragedy.
Well, they have homeless starting fires all the time in California.
I want to go back just for a minute to your comment on nicotine being as addictive as it is. I was in, Dollar General the other day, and I glanced. They have the cigarettes locked up now, and they are $9 a pack. How can anybody afford to smoke in today's world?
Yeah, and you usually smoke 2 packs a day. It's $18 a day.
I quit back in 1979 or 80, and
I quit in 80.
I was a 3-pack-a-day person.
And, wow.
And I had a cold, and I darn near thought I was going to die with that cold, and I went out, and I got orange juice, and I got orange juice, aspirin, and cigarettes, and I smoked through that pack of cigarettes. Thought I was going to die with that pack. That was the very last pack that I ever had.
I want to comment on his comment about how this kid that he was talking about got on drugs. It was probably through marijuana. You hear all these people saying marijuana is not a gateway drug. That is false. Marijuana is a gateway drug. Once the dealer gets you buying marijuana from them, they'll say, hey, kid, why don't you try this?
Yeah. Just for a little bigger kick. And again,
it's not because you crave something more. It's because you're marketed. You're in the system to be marketed.
Right.
And again, if we're talking and you look at the marijuana that we had a number of years ago versus today, it's a very, very different marijuana. Folks, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is CCT8 Wake Up Call.
What's the largest gun shop in Craven County? If you said East 70 Pond, you are correct. Since Drew got back from the most recent gun show, new guns have been pouring in faster than they can open the boxes. The large showroom at East 70 Pond, slam bam, full of firearms. New guns and used guns, long guns and handguns. You will find weapons for self-defense, hunting, target shooting, and collectibles. The team at East 70 Pond is friendly, courteous, and knowledgeable, especially in the area of guns. If East 70 Pond doesn't doesn't have the gun you are looking for, they'll try to find it. If you want to do a gun transfer, E70 Pawn will help you do it right. If you are looking to buy, sell, or trade a gun, there's no better place to do it than E70 Pawn. Of course, E70 has tools, electronics, trolling motors, and a great selection of jewelry. But their specialty is guns. And we're talking hundreds of guns. Come see for yourself. E70 Pawn, across from Craven County Fairgrounds, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Welcome back. Again, thank you for listening to the sponsors and supporters. We're going to go off to dual citizenship or which?
Yeah, there's a bill been introduced. I can't remember the name of the representative, but anyways, it might not matter right now. And the purpose of the bill was to address the notion of dual citizenship.
Bernie Moreno.
Okay. And anyway, so the idea being that if you come to this country and you are a citizen of another country, that you have to make a decision. Do you want to continue being the citizen of the country and show your allegiance to that country? Because it may come to that. There may be a time when our country and the person's original country are in conflict, and who are they going to side with? And so the bill, my understanding is that if you become a naturalized citizen, that you must remit your citizenship of your previous country. Like Mondani, the new elected mayor of New York, he's a naturalized citizen, but he's also a citizen of Uganda. So, I mean, if it came to an issue between those two countries, where is his allegiance going to be? I mean, it's just, it makes sense to me.
I think he's already shown his cards on that.
Yeah, he's shown his allegiance. He's shown his allegiance to communism.
No,
I'm
opposed to that law because I think there are times when dual citizen is not a problem. And I have friends that are dual citizens of America and Britain. And I'm also thinking about the expatriate Iranian population in New York. There's a fairly large expatriate Iranian population in Great Neck. Now, there didn't used to be. Because when the Shah was deposed with the Iranian Revolution, they fled the country. And they have hopes of someday the country going back to something other than the mess that it currently is, and they want to go back. Now, I'm sure that many of them, if not all of them, have become American citizens, but they've kept their Iranian citizenship so that they can maybe go back to their country when things get cleaned up.
And I think that part of the problem, I think, Mary, is the fact that we're having this issue, particularly with the Islamists, of really trying to determine, are they trying to change our country to be like their country, or are they coming over here to assimilate and be Americans? And I think it's a legitimate position for any receiving country to make sure the people coming in want to abide by their laws, their culture, their civilization, and not be aligned to somebody else.
That, to me, is not a dual citizenship issue. That's an Islamist issue. Because even if you could get your run-of-the-mill Islamist, and I'm not talking your run-of-the-mill Muslim, I'm talking your run-of-the-mill Islamist, to renounce their citizenship to wherever it was, that wouldn't change the fact that they were an Islamist trying to change America into their vision.
Well, it might not, but the point is it gives you some leverage. For example, Sharia law is something that the Islamists and the Muslims abide by.
Yes.
At a very high percentage of the people from some of these countries, they live by Sharia law. When you come to this country, you can't live by Sharia law and still obey our laws because they're so dramatically different. It's like if a woman gets raped under Sharia law, in order to bring a claim that she was raped, she has to have four male
witnesses
who observed that to testify for her.
That's not going to happen.
Well, that's my point.
And
so what you do with these people when they come in, if they want to become American citizens, you say, you must renounce Sharia law. You must say you will not follow, you will not, and you do not intend to follow, and you will follow American law. If they're not willing to do that, let them stay. We don't need them.
Well, I would suspect that they would lie, because in Sharia law, it's okay to lie to infidels. And in agreement with what you're saying, there have been honor killings in America, which are under Sharia law, where daughters have been killed because they were becoming westernized. There was recently an honor killing in the Netherlands that is currently on trial. A father and his two sons killed his daughter because she was getting westernized.
Yeah.
And the father has fled back to Syria. The two sons are standing trial claiming their father did it.
Yeah. And anything we can do to block those people coming to our country, I'm in favor of. And it means that a certain subgroup of the people won't come to our country because they have to renounce their citizenship, whether they lie or they don't lie. I'm in favor of. Because I'm in favor of these people not coming to our country.
Well, again, not coming to... Based on the circumstances under which they're coming
now. Look what's happening to Great Britain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've been overwhelmed with Muslims. And now they're not even going to have jury trials anymore.
And I'm not really sympathetic to the reason they're coming here. I'm sympathetic to whether they're good for our country or not.
That's right.
This business about asylum. If somebody's having a problem in their home country, then we have to admit them. That doesn't make sense to me. Let them fix their own country. Let them deal with it.
Well,
we're going to take anybody from any country that's having a problem with it.
I believe our old immigration standards used to be you had to have something you would contribute to this country.
Exactly. And you had to have a means of support. If you came in and you couldn't demonstrate that you had a means of support, then you would turn back. It's like... Up in the Somalis up in Minnesota, I think it was 85% of them were receiving some sort of social welfare benefit. 85% of these people come in are living off us, our taxpayer money, of our taxes. That's not acceptable to me.
No, there needs to be a law that says if you decide to come to America, you cannot take advantage of any of the American safety net welfare programs for a minimum of 10 years.
Well, there's already a law.
Is anybody enforcing it?
Trump's trying to kick them off SNAP, kick them off Medicaid, kick them off Medicare, kick them out of HHS housing, right? Because the immigration law says they don't have a right to it.
Yes.
No, they don't have a priority. I mean,
and the Democrats are fighting him to the nail.
We, as a couple of veterans, when we look at the services offered to the disabled vets or whatever else versus those offered to the illegal immigrants, there's a big disconnect there.
But I think it seems like the table's turning now. Right now, given what went on, not only in this fraud up there with the Somalis, but the shooting of the National Guard people by someone from Afghanistan,
mm-hmm.
who came over here actually legally, But he didn't show any affiliation. He's killing the very people that he is supposed to be supportive. And I think people are just starting to wake up. And like Pat said about what's going on in Europe, you go to some of these cities, you can't recognize them anymore. They don't, parts of Paris and London, they're more like a Middle Eastern country. And I saw the other day, they had a little news excerpt, and they were showing, I can't remember whether it was this Dearborn, Michigan, or one of these other towns that are predominantly Muslim now. They have 5 call to prayer announcements in the environment. It's out loud in their cities, in their towns. It's like you'd be sitting here and all of a sudden they have these loud announcements calling the Muslims to prayer. That's not America. And I'm for religious freedom, but I'm not for turning us into a Middle Eastern country.
Your comment about the shooting of the National Guardsmen, I want to mention something about that. There was an article on Substack this week, and the title of the article was, "It All Started with a Subway Sandwich, by the way." And the article pointed out that when, in August, when the person assaulted an ICE officer with a Subway sandwich, when that came to trial, the person was let off. Now, admittedly, a Subway sandwich is not a dangerous weapon, but it's still an assault, and it was let go. And that was the signal that it's okay to go after these people. We have not protected our law enforcement the way we should. We have not stood up for them in our courts. We have not, they've been demonized in the press, and somebody has declared open season on people trying to enforce our laws.
How can you stand up for them in court when the population doesn't want them there and the judges are woke? There's nobody in court to stand up for them.
That's right.
Okay, so now...
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to what we were talking about the shooting in Washington and the fact that Trump has really come out. And you have to admire him for coming out and taking firm stances on these issues. Anyway, he came out and announced that he wanted to permanently pause all immigration, legal, obviously illegal, including legal immigration, from third world countries. And he identified 19 of them. And then Kristi Noem, the head of the, what is she head of?
Homeland Security.
Yeah. She came out and she added additional ones. So her recommendation is there's 30 or 32 countries from which we don't want to take any of their immigrants because we can't be assured that they're not coming to destroy our country. They're not coming because they love our country. They're coming because they want to destroy it. And, death to America and some of these other things that are rampant in these countries are not the countries you want to take people from.
Yeah, why in the world, after watching demonstrations on the street that say death to America, would we invite these people to America?
Yes, Joe Biden.
Except some of those demonstrations are paid for by the government. That needs to be considered, too. In Iran, you're required to go to the demonstrations.
But again, how many people have come here just to battle with ICE? Not for any reason other than to battle with ICE.
Yeah.
Folks, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Dr. Jay Singleton and his staff spend a lot of time removing cataracts, and they are good at it. Dr. Singleton has been doing a high volume of these procedures for 15 years, and the state-of-the-art Singleton Surgery Center is bringing costs down for patients and participating insurance companies. For dedication, experience, and convenience, you can trust the Singleton team. Dr. Jay Singleton and the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? People in the community that love this country to protect individual liberty and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Thank you for enjoying our sponsors and supporters. We ask you to go and visit them, and we're back. And Alan, you wanted to take us?
Yes, I have a good news item, which is always nice, and that is that President Trump had at the Oval Office yesterday, I believe, where the announcement took place, that there was a, I think it was the CEO or head of Dell Computer, a billionaire.
Michael Dell,
okay. And anyway, he has agreed to donate of his own money $6.5 billion to help fund a program which I believe Trump initiated or Trump.
They're separate.
Trump
was separate. They're separate.
Yeah, but it's just the idea, though. The idea is what I'm talking about. It was Trump's idea. I know it's a separate program. But the point being, what it is that children born within a certain period of time will be given $1,000 or just to fund a 401k type of program that would, I think, be investing in stocks and maybe other things. I don't know what all the investments are. It probably doesn't matter. But anyway, the idea is to encourage people to have children. And it's also to encourage children to look at our country as a capitalist country. In other words, they will have a fund that keeps increasing. So it's kind of like an anti-socialism kind of effort, too. And so I think it's a great program. I mean, it shows you how President Trump and some of these independent businessmen, they look at these problems in a much different way than the socialists do, which always just want to take taxpayer money from somebody else and give it to those people who they think need it.
Okay. The money, I believe, is going to be indexed with a stock index fund.
Kind of like an IRA.
Okay, and they will be able to access it when they're 18, which could be used for a trade school or it could be used for whatever, but hopefully at that point they've developed some
first home purchase.
Yeah.
And it could be added to by them, too, over the years, in my understanding.
But, I mean, it could also result in some fiscal responsibility on the part of young people.
Yeah. Do the parents apply for this, for their children to be enrolled in this, or is it tied to a Social Security number?
I have no idea.
It's tied to a Social Security number. Kid has to have a Social Security number.
Okay.
So. Yeah, now they give kids Social Security numbers like when they're born.
Right.
Ridiculous.
So unless something changes, the kids that have had birthright citizenship would qualify for that as well.
Probably.
They'd have to be excluded because birthright citizenship would have given them a Social Security number.
Yeah, so they would, that's right. Okay. So we'll see how that all gets sorted out. There was an election yesterday in Tennessee.
Yeehaw.
And Matt Van Epps won.
And the press got it 100% wrong.
And I think the polls even got it wrong. I mean, he won by 9 points.
So the polls said he was ahead by two points.
Yeah.
So they got it right that he was going to win. They just didn't get the margin right.
So the woman that hates Nashville.
Right.
And hates country music.
And hates bachelorettes. And
hates everything Tennessee stands for.
Why would anybody vote for somebody who hates where they live?
Because
obviously she had a large following.
Trump derangement syndrome.
I was going to say haters. Haters will vote for her.
Trump derangement syndrome.
But it's fortunately kind of offsets what happened in Virginia and New Jersey with the election that the Democrats won.
And yeah, but Virginia and New Jersey are very blue states.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying is that people are looking and are concerned about what's going to happen in this 2026 with all these congressional races and some senatorial races. So it was kind of like the Democrats won in Virginia and New Jersey, but now the Republicans won in Tennessee, which is a nice counterbalance because people say, well, you know, the Republicans don't have a chance in this election. We're going to lose the House and lose the Senate. Not so fast.
Yeah, but I'd temper that a little bit. And I know Trump brings out more than anybody else, but Trump won in that same district 22 points.
Yes.
So he won 9 points. So I'm concerned about the midterm.
We should be. We should be concerned. Yeah.
It's a little bit of a warning sign for me. It's a glass half empty on that is how I look at it.
And again, the elections that we're talking about back with Virginia and also this election, they were held in really, really odd times of the year, mm-hmm. times of the election cycle. We're used to the presidential election cycle and then the off year being 2 years true. Later. Now, yeah. here are in the odd years. So.
Yeah. And there's also, when you think about it, if in some nightmare scenario, the Democrats take Congress, the first thing they're going to do is try to impeach President Trump. It's going to be a nightmare for 2 years.
They're not going to try. They're going to impeach him because they'll be the majority.
Which makes me wonder why the Republicans that are in office right now are not codifying some of Trump's executive orders into law, because they should be trying to prepare for the what if.
They don't want to give up the filibuster.
And again, you can make arguments on both sides in terms of getting rid of the filibuster. And you can say, oh, no, because then if the Democrats get control, they won't have a filibuster. But understand that if the Democrats get control, the first thing they're going to do is get rid of the filibuster. So, you know, you can argue that one on both sides.
And if you're confident that that's going to happen, okay, then we should get rid of the filibuster now.
Yes.
They shouldn't wait. I mean, if you're really assured of that and you're really confident that's going to happen, because otherwise you just give them the ability to change everything that we've done.
Yeah, I agree. I think that would give some of the opportunities for executive orders to pass.
One of the predictions is that will happen come January 31st when this next continuing resolution expires. That rather than going into a potential shutdown again, all of a sudden that filibuster is gone and we're going great guns. We're not going to let them
do it again.
Yeah.
Hurt. We'll see.
Okay. Let's go to New Jersey to Clarence Thomas versus New Jersey.
New Jersey went after a crisis pregnancy center, pro-life, and they sent them overwhelming discovery requests. Years of operation. They wanted their donor list. They wanted all of their paperwork for years back. That's oppressive.
What did they teach? What did they give out? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Luckily, Justice Thomas asked them during argument, did you have any complaints about the center? No. We had complaints about other centers, but did you have a complaint about this center? No, sir. But you have to realize that, you know, we have three bases for investigating them, and they could have been violating this. That's a fishing expedition. That's illegal. That's unconstitutional. And so Justice Thomas brought it back to, but you didn't have any complaints. No, sir.
No, sir. So this is the DA
whoever argued the case.
For the state of New Jersey.
For the state of New Jersey.
So we'll see how this works.
Well, they know that it's a fishing expedition, yes.
Right.
Now, we do need to mention that there are currently filings going on for offices in North Carolina and in Craven County for the upcoming election in November of next year.
Well, for the primary.
When is the primary?
Primary will be in March.
I saw on the news that Don Davis is going to move so he can run for District 1.
He doesn't have to move.
He's in District 1.
I mean, you don't have to live in the district.
As a representative, you don't have to live in a district, because that's the same problem that I believe that Greg Murphy will have.
But that was made was that he was going to move, but he is going to go for District 1. And then the other thing I read today was that there is a Democrat who's going to turn Republican and vote primary Tim Moore as a Republican, but she's a Democrat now. I read that today.
Now, District 1, is that the district that Craven County got moved into?
Yes. It's huge.
23 counties, I believe.
It's huge.
Okay.
It's a very, very, very big district.
And we have a number of people who have announced for that House seat.
Well, there's a number of people that have announced, but there's only two that so far have actually
filed,
which are Bobby Hannig and Eric Rouse. And we know that Asa Buck will be, I believe he was filing as we're recording this show.
Yeah, there were quite a few. I saw that Jennifer Dacey has filed for Board of Education, and Lee Kirkman, Board of Education. So there's some new names on the list. I see that for Craven County Commissioners, that Theron McCabe is going to challenge Sherry.
He was the prior.
Right. Yeah. So he's coming back to challenge Sherry. I think Sherry has done a remarkable job down there. I would encourage everybody to look at records before they make a decision.
And our prayers continue for Sherry and for Matt, because I had the liver transplant, and they're still up in Chapel Hill.
Who had the liver transplant?
Her husband.
Yeah.
Most of it looks like the Craven County Board of Commissioners, most of the current incumbents have already filed.
Now, we're going to talk about, maybe not primaried, but we're going to talk about the NC Supreme Court Associate Justice Anita Earls.
What about her?
She's a progressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, she came out. She's trouble. We need to get rid of her.
Is she the sitting
justice? She's the sitting justice right now.
Of re-election.
And I think, I believe she came out and she was very critical of ICE going into Charlotte.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't she come out and make some statements that were totally inappropriate for a Supreme Court?
For a sitting
justice, I guess.
Well, I know that by going into Charlotte, they've rescued a tremendous amount of children. They've arrested a bunch of illegals. And they've slowed down the crime rate. So why would anyone object to that?
And it's unfortunately also relieved the traffic problem in certain areas.
I mean, really, the fact that the National Guard or ICE is going into these places is a result of the fact that the local law enforcement and the local judges have not done their job, isn't it?
Why do you keep asking why people oppose it? They're Democrats. It's emotions. They've been ordered to.
But what about their own safety?
By the way, per that safety, as of December 1st, was it Elaine? Elaine, who's the the victim in
Elena,
her law is in effect.
Arena.
Right. Yeah, that's going to force bail or force incarceration for a number of these perps. What else do we have?
Well, we can just say that, you know, safer cities are a good idea.
Even the people that live in the criminal heavy areas, you would think that they would appreciate some safety for their children.
New York just released 7,000 illegal aliens.
Yes, with criminal records, I know.
7,000. Grab that. And ISIS is getting ready to send 100 agents up to Somaliaville.
So see what happens. Okay, folks, on that, we're going to wrap it up and say, folks, have a wonderful week. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.